At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. Germanicus is here. The headlines tumble around us these last days. We begin with what is described in Moscow as an attack by NATO on Mother Russia. I read headlines from the London Telegraph. Former British soldier fighting for Ukraine captured by Russia in Kursk. Another headline. Mystery drone spotted over British aircraft carrier. Another headline. Putin ready to cripple Britain with cyber attacks. Another headline. Russian general who faked victory sacked by Putin. And this in the Financial Times in these last hours. Russia recruits Yemeni mercenaries to fight in Ukraine. Mysterious Houthi-linked company duping men into joining Moscow's war machine. Well done, MI6. I like that word, duping, there. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. Here we are by the Thames. And just when we thought we could never get anything as wonderfully ironic as the most recent election in the 21st century, America, along comes a NATO attack on Russia. I read the headline as given to us by CNN, a favorite network of the NATO forces. Ukraine fires U.S.-made longer-range missiles into Russia for the first time. Christian Edwards is the author. The attack comes just 2 days after the Biden administration, writes CNN, gave Kyiv the green light to use the longer-range American weapons against targets inside Russia. Germanicus, to my memory, and I've not done a thorough search, but I'm pretty sure I've searched adequately, this is the first time NATO and the United States have ever fired a missile into Mother Russia. The whole of the 20th century, that was a nightmare scenario. And here we are in the 21st, and CNN's writing it up with metaphors such as green light. Your measure of Russia at this point, is this an attack on Mother Russia that is taken as grave in Moscow, or is it treated as the last gasp of the Biden administration? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. This entire affair reminds me of British plans, which Mr. Churchill supported, thanks to the Russian invasion of Finland. The UK and France were ready to stage French bombers from Syria to attack the Russian oil fields in Baku. So that the course of world history could have been changed had they actually struck those oil fields and set on fire the incredible, I mean, there was oil just rising from the ground. It could have been a disaster for the course of the West and for history. And this is what we're looking at today, in the sense that the Western powers, U.S. and NATO, created an aggressive strategic impetus against Russia, which culminated in this war. And now that they're losing the war, they want to do something feckless and futile to show their stainless virtue, just as France and Britain were about to do something magnificently stupid in the winter of 1940. So what you're seeing is a kind of continuity of Western stupidity, narcissism, self-absorption that we as whatever the Western Bloc should be called, are fighting a lifestyle war using Ukraine as the poor proxy tar baby that is going to take all the punishment to satisfy our own needs, our own needs to reinforce our sense of how great we are. And of course, Russia knows all of this. And if you track Russian commentary, Russian conversations, even just simply listening to Mr. Putin, you know that Russia understands that this is a kind of strange last gasp of NATO, and that what awaits NATO is the specter of defeat. And this escalation is frankly a kind of reflexive or maybe spasmodic and desperate response to try and keep the war going, or maybe to bring the conflict to a head in advance of the January 20 deadline when everything will change. And NATO is confronting the fact that the war that it prosecuted for the last 3 years, the war that it effectively crafted and manicured and curated and created, has come to nothing and it's about to fall apart. And so this is an opportunity, a final last gasp, a final throw of the die on the part of the elites in the EU and in Washington, the imperial city, to try and keep the war going, and it won't succeed because the fact is that Mr. Putin isn't going to be provoked by any of this. It would take some extraordinary strike on the part of Europe to bring Russia to the point where it would do something truly escalatory.
Detail. Russia did respond in some fashion 24 hours later by firing what is called an intercontinental ballistic missile, ICBM. Technically, that's accurate. Anything
yes.
longer than 5,500 kilometers is an ICBM. Hypersonic ballistic missile. Keefe says it has no defenses from ballistic missiles. But it fired this in a fashion that Mr. Putin called experimental. The interpretation on the NATO side was, this is a shot across the bow. He's got other missiles like this. We're
yes.
now, I just want to describe that we're now shooting missiles at each other. This and the attackums, there are no, to my knowledge, Ukrainian forces trained to fire attackums. That has to be a NATO crew.
It is, always. And same with Taurus and Storm Shadow. The Oreshnik or Hazelnut missile is an extraordinary order of magnitude leap in capability, because when it fires in a less than intercontinental mode, in a theater mode, obviously, which it did in the use against Dnipro, its conventional warhead, which consists of 38 rods from God. I mean, 38 kinetic rods, which each one at 200 kilos is going to wreak havoc. And apparently it did it. It leveled this factory complex in Dnipro. And it could level any NATO airfield. So rather than having to launch an airstrike of many dozens of planes against NATO facilities, all Russia needs to do is launch a single missile against a single airfield and completely knock it out.
Did NATO want this to happen? Did NATO know that Russia would respond with...
No, it's unprepared. This is a surprise. But NATO is responding who knows how. Who knows what kind of ripples or earth-shaking discussions are going on within NATO intelligence and in the U.S. But the truth of the matter is, they've got us. Mr. Putin has sent a very discreet message that, no, don't do this. We can actually take you apart, root and branch. And you have to understand that Russia has had 3 years of intense effort to create the capability that it has. It's been fighting a high-level war for 3 years, and we've been sitting at the margins, playing around, giving the Ukrainians little things that we have, little baubles, like little drone attack boats that can go against Sevastopol or other things that are nothing compared to what Russia has now is an actual powerful military. The U.S. has not responded by reforming and recreating its military capability, which it should have, given the way the Russians have responded. They have an intense advantage over us, and we've done nothing.
A simple 1 minute. What does London want? What is it? Why is Sarmer in this game?
The British are in the game to maintain their special relationship with the U.S. Back in the day when Churchill first succored or seduced Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his letters, he knew that Britain was done, and the only way Britain could aspire to a sense of its former grandeur was to be the most necessary sidekick of the United States.
All right, let's go to
what they're doing now.
Let's go to the people of Europe then. I'm speaking with Germanicus Michael Vlahos. We're in Londinium. It's late afternoon, winter coming on. The centurions and their families have gone home. We have our cups of wine. We're a little more alarmed than usual because NATO is acting foolishly. Russia is acting logically. And the people of Europe are paying attention. The American people might not be. They're exhausted by the recent election. They're looking for relief with the new administration. The people of Europe are very well informed. And when we come back, what is Alternative for Deutschland? What does that represent in all of Europe? This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.